Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. This is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, got a lot to go over today, including a rather sad loss, which I believe may be indicative of what we're going to see for the rest of the season. You disagree? We will talk about that later. First, we'll start with the injury report, which is lengthy, to say the least. Most of the team is injured and on the injury report in some way. Only 14 names. We're going to run through this faster, so people just don't fast forward through this part.
Yep.
First off, Tracy Walker with his knee. No practice Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, it's concerning. Could mean bad news for him on the weekend.
Deshaun Hand with his ankle this time, no longer his elbow. No Wednesday or Thursday practice either.
Yeah, with an ankle, it's a little bit easier than a knee. We'll see if he practices on Friday, but again, this would be a pretty big blow. He was the catalyst that kind of has been changing their production in the defensive run game, I guess. And so it'd be bad to lose him.
Sam Martin. Abdomen, no Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, this is a little strange. It could just be rest because they said that he left the field in Oakland feeling sore. They signed Matt Weil to the practice squad. We'll get to him in a little bit. But if Sam can't go, then they'll need to add a punter, and which means they could drop someone, promote Weil, maybe even if it's just for a week to let Martin heal up. But it's an interesting one. It could easily just be rest, though, too, for Martin.
All right. Next up, Romeo Okwara, groin. A full practice on Wednesday, no practice on Thursday.
Yeah, so that means he got injured in practice on Wednesday, which is typically a bad sign when someone shows up on the injury report midweek. And the fact that he didn't practice on Thursday is now a bit discouraging. If he's able to get back on the practice field tomorrow, there's a good chance he'll play. But if he's out tomorrow, he won't play this game.
Miles Killebrew, a head injury.
Yeah, and the same thing as Okwara, no practice on Wednesday, or a full practice on Wednesday, but then it was reduced to a limited role on Thursday. So a little bit better than Okwara. But again, midweek injuries are typically really bad. You typically, more often than not, if you're injured midweek, you don't play. So it does happen. It happened with A'shaun Robinson a couple weeks ago, was injured midweek, still played. But that ankle with A'shaun's been lingering. So, it's possible to get injured and play. It's just more often than not, we see these guys not doing well.
Joe Dahl, ankle injury. No Wednesday. Return limited on Thursday.
Yeah, so that's an improvement. Step in the right direction. This is the same thing that happened to Glasgow last week. So if he gets another limited practice on Friday, then we'll kind of see where he is. He could be a Saturday downgrade to out, like what happened with Glasgow, or he could be a guy that ends up being a game-time decision. Hopefully, with what the interior line needs to be as healthy as they can be, hopefully he's on the mend pretty quick. Because Wiggins was not super against Oakland, and I'd prefer if he wasn't in the starting lineup myself.
The aforementioned Graham Glasgow with his back, limited Wednesday, Thursday.
Again, yeah, step in the right direction for him too. So if he returns and Dahl doesn't, then Wiggins shifts over to left guard.
We'll still see a lot of Abushi.
Abushi only played 3 snaps last week when Dahl was injured. But if both Dahl and Glasgow can't go, then yeah, Bushi starts, and your reserve is now Bo Benchall, right? Which is a scary thought.
Hey, a lot of people liked him in the offseason. We were very happy when they signed him.
Yeah, well, he's got a long way to go. Maybe he's improved. Maybe he's shown improvement in game action that we haven't been able to see behind the scenes. But that would be a troubling loss to lose your guards. I mean, both Dahl and Glasgow could be in the game and playing and everything could be fine. But, there's some mild concern there, right, for sure.
Flipping over to the other side of the ball, Mike Daniels with his foot injury. Limited Wednesday and Thursday, but that might be actually a good sign.
Yeah.
Because he's headed towards playing.
Yeah. I have said the way that the the way that the Lions deal with these long-term injuries or players coming off long-term injuries is they typically, the Lions want them to have a couple of full practices in before they're able to play. If he gets a full practice in on Friday, he still may not play on Sunday. They might want another couple of practices in full before he's ready. So I still think Daniels probably won't play this week. I'm still waiting to see that full participation level before I feel confident with him coming back.
A'shaun Robinson, ankle injury, limited Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, and he was limited last week, and he was injured the week before, but it hasn't really slowed him down. I'm pretty confident he will be good to go, which they'll need if Hand is limited.
Matthew Stafford, hip and back. He'll play, don't even say a word. Darius Slay, hamstring. Full Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, so Darius is good to go. Shouldn't be any issues there. The only thing I wanted to point out about Stafford was that the back injury is... No, it's separate. It's separate than his previous back injuries. Okay, that's
great.
It. Sorry.
He'll play.
Yeah, no worries there.
All right. Amani Oruwariye with his knee, full Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, so he's close to getting removed from the injury report. Good for him. He might not be active on game day, but step in the right direction for him to be at least available.
Continuing with the entire defensive line, Damon Harrison with a groin injury, full Wednesday, Thursday as a rest day, so he'll likely play.
Yeah, this is what he did the last 3 weeks. He'll probably get a full practice in tomorrow or maybe limited. He'll be tagged with a questionable label, then he'll play.
Danny Amendola with his hand injury, full Wednesday and Thursday.
Looks good to go.
Jesse James with the back, full Wednesday, removed from the injury report on Thursday, so that one might be cleared up.
Yep, that one's good.
Austin Bryant with his pec. His decision clock is now down to 14 days.
It's actually 12 now. Or by the time people listen to this, it'll probably be 12.
So it's likely he's not going to play this year.
Oh, no, he won't play this week. That's right.
No, I'm not saying this year. What do you feel about him going back on IR and just taking a red shirt this year?
I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine if he was able to come. What it sounds like to me is that they're trying to just get him up to speed, playbook-wise. But they've got...
So then he will be. Then he will be in uniform eventually.
It's possible. Yeah, I mean, because
All right, let me ask you. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think they're going to try and get him back.
All
right. They'll have all of next week and then into the following week before they have to make a decision. So they've got time.
All right, so let's move on to the roster moves. This one still is an injury. Running back Trey Carson placed on injured reserve, so we'll no longer see him this season.
Yeah, they made that move in order to free up a roster spot because he wasn't going to be healthy for the game. He had a hamstring injury. Typically, hamstring injuries aren't that significant enough to end on IR, but they will do them occasionally. The writing on the wall here is, they like Trey Carson. They just don't think he's ready, and so they don't know. They don't think he's a valuable enough contributor to warrant a roster spot, especially in when he's injured. Warrant a roster spot, but they like his upside, so they're willing to pay him to keep his rights.
Running back Zach Zenner. I mean, Paul Perkins added to the practice squad and then promoted to active roster.
Yeah, so he
never
played
replacement now.
Yeah, he played 3 snaps and got 3 carries last week.
I was going to say, like, it seemed like he played more than that. That's because he got the ball every time.
Yep.
Running back Bo Scarborough, very well known back from Alabama, added to the practice squad.
Right, so we're just playing musical chairs right here at running back, right? So Scarborough is now on the practice squad with Wes Hills, and they still have Perkins, McKissick, and Ty Johnson on the active roster. Scarborough he has an element to his game that's a little bit different than the current backs, where he plays with more power. He's a good pass protector, but he doesn't make anybody miss. Because he runs upright and because he runs with power, he gets injured a lot. I know people love the name, and so they're in love with that
pedigree
as a player. Yeah. I more respect the pedigree, the fact that Alabama went after him and he played at Alabama and he contributed there at Alabama for a while. But, I mean, that shows that, you know, there's talent there. The issue is, I don't know if he's much better than Paul Perkins. You know what I mean? And
oh, yeah. I don't think we know star walking through the door.
Exactly. And so I think while he has some potential. There's some pretty big pitfalls that he has as well. So, but like I said, he has an element to his game that they're lacking, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him or Wes Hills get promoted over the weekend. But I mean, who knows if they can afford it with the injuries that they have.
Punter, Michigan man, Matt Weil,
yep,
has been added to the practice squad.
This is an interesting move because Weil actually has very good numbers. He averages this season like 48 yards a kick, which is above Sam Martin. On his career, he averages 45.5 or something like that, which is like just a little bit below Sam Martin. And remember, they just renegotiated Sam Martin's contract. So while this for sure looks like a move as insurance if Sam Martin can't play this weekend, this could also be a low-key move for the long term where they're like, hey, we want to see what this guy has. Let's see if he can, we can put him on the practice squad. We can get a long look at him. And then come the off season, they'll have a good look at Weil. They'll have plenty of information on Martin, and they'll make a decision on what they want to do with Martin on that. So I wouldn't be surprised, even if Weil doesn't get promoted to the active roster, if he doesn't hang around on that practice squad for a while.
Linebacker Anthony Pittman and offensive lineman Casey Tucker were waived bye-bye from the practice squad.
Yeah, Pittman, local guy from Wayne State. I would not be surprised to see him come back because coaches really raved about him quite a bit.
And then finally, Christian Jones signed a 2-year contract extension. Mm-hmm. Then didn't look so great in the game on Sunday.
Yeah. The big thing is in this scheme, you need big bodies. And he is a very big body at the linebacker position. And he can do a lot of things. And he can play a lot of different spots. And that's a valuable player. Now, the cost to get him was pretty affordable. Mike Rothstein from ESPN put out some rough numbers on what the contract looked like, and it looked very reasonable. Even if he's just a reserve moving forward, or if he's just like their third or fourth linebacker, that's still it'll still be a good contract for the Lions moving forward, no matter which role he plays. It's actually going to look like a pretty smart deal when it's all said and done, I think.
All right, you did pretty well there, a lot better than I thought you'd do. You could have dragged that one. That could have been half the podcast right there. All right, that's it with the roster moves. Let's talk a little bit about that Raiders game, a 31-24 loss in the Lions' last visit to Oakland for now.
Yeah.
You know, the Vegas thing might not work out, and although he doesn't seem yet to be like his father, although he has moved the team out of town.
Right.
They might always end up back in Oakland. All right, so one bright spot to the 31-24 loss is the performance of Matthew Stafford with two blips on that radar. The interception.
Yeah.
And the second down play on the goal line.
Which one?
Oh, well.
You think the handoff to McKissick, they blame Stafford for.
Yeah, but
most people thought it was McKissick.
That one's neither here nor there.
The interception was really good by Worley. That's hard. I mean, I get that that's a tough throw, but that's a throw that they've been making all year. So I'm okay with that. The last play of the game, he put the ball where he needed to.
No, well,
bad play design.
I wouldn't put that on him. Sure. I would put on him when he trips and falls on second down. Tom Brady's not going to trip and fall on second. I know he's not Tom Brady, but they don't fall down on second down on the goal line at the end of a game where they need this touchdown to tie the game. You know, weird things always seem to happen with them like that. And now, great performance. They wouldn't be in the game without him. So yeah, I'm not going to get too much. That's what I said.
Right?
Mistakes happen.
Mm-hmm.
Fumbles happen. Interceptions happen. I can't kill him for any of those things, especially when he was 26 of 41. 460 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. He's putting up. This is his best season since 2011. It might even be better than the 2011 season.
2,499 yards through 8 games. That's a pretty good pace. And the interceptions and touchdowns are very good as well, overall.
And he did it the old-fashioned Madden way, hitting the wide receivers, hitting his number one and two guys, 8 catches, 126 yards and a touchdown for Marvin Jones. Kenny Golladay, 4 catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown for him. Of course, we do have to point out, neither were on the field on the last play of the game, which is questionable, but you know, what are you going to do?
I had that coming up here in a couple points, but if you want to talk about that now, we can talk about that now.
Well, we're in the middle of it.
I think, you know, with that fourth down play, first of all, I completely disagree with taking those two guys and Danny Amendola off the field.
Yeah, it was so, just the tight ends.
So the excuse was, and it was just the tight ends, and your number one tight end was on the sideline because he got hit in the back, right? And he got the wind knocked out of him. So you picked a play where you are faking run, which everyone knows you're not running, okay? But so they picked that play, and then you have your number two and number three tight ends on the field who, I mean, collectively, do they have more than like 10 catches between them on the season? Probably not, right?
But they're not. They're not the worst tight ends.
They're
ever,
not.
But you're right.
You design the play where you fake the run. So by faking the run, you are eliminating your fullback. You're eliminating your running back out of the play, and you've got an extra offensive tackle on the field. So that means you have two options to go to, and that's it. So you've taken this play, it just bothers me on so many levels. And the idea is, in the reasoning behind this that the coaches and the players have all said, is this is the play they've run in practice. They've done these plays over and over and over, and this one's been successful. And they believe in it. They think it's warranted. But when you really break it down and like look at it, you've taken your top three options off the field. Your fourth option is off the field. So you're down to your fifth and sixth options. And you're eliminating three of your options by doing a fake. And so if they don't bite on the play action, they're going to just double cover both of those tight ends, which they did. And you've killed yourself dead in the water. On top of that, the designed play is set up so that your left guard pulls and then Stafford rolls to his left. And the left guard is there to give him some extra protection. But the left guard is your backup left guard who has only played two snaps the entire season, the two snaps prior to that play. And he completely whiffs. He completely ignores a defender and just because he wants to peel out and get to that spot. So that defender runs free to Stafford. So he doesn't even... He's got to have the awareness.
And he can't even scoot to the end zone himself.
So
that probably is ultimately another option on that play since he's already moving.
Correct. So, I mean, what you've done is you've reduced your options. You've put lower-end skill players as your options. And then you're having replacement options execute key parts of the play. It baffles me that that's the play call that they got. Now, this is a reoccurring theme this season. And we've seen this happen multiple times. So this is the same scenario in Arizona when they ended up calling that timeout on Stafford when he threw the play to McKissick that went for the first down, but they called the timeout and then came back and ran four verticals.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. You're putting a worse play in after a timeout on a play that you have to have. And it cost them that Arizona game, and it cost them this game, or at least cost them the ability to tie this game. And this is the part of the...
It's the fatal flaw of Darrell Bevell.
But this is it. Like, I think Bevell is... He's so much better of an offensive
player. Light years better than Jim Bob Cooter, but light he does years. Have this issue.
Yes, and this is a glaring issue that he needs to fix. Because...
He gets the yips when it's on the line.
That's 100% right. And it's happened multiple points during the year. And that's the part that scares me, is that this team is designed to win close games or keep low-scoring games and keep it close. They're not shootout teams. I mean, they can shoot it out, but it's always going to be close games. And if you can't make critical decisions when the game's on the line, that's a problem. And that, I think, is the... If there's one hang-up that this team has on offense this year, it's that play. It's that inability to, like you said, to get the yips on game deciding plays.
All right. You know, everybody's lamented this. Everybody's watched it. Everybody's rewatched it, and they're not very happy with it. So, yeah,
but I mean, moving forward, I guess that's got to change. That's
it may change. It may not change. You know, it's not up to us. The run game is still struggling. Ty Johnson only averaging 3.2 yards per carry. Combined, the team did very poorly. 61, 77, 90 yards rushing on 19 carries. So that's not great. That's a little over 4 yards a carry.
4.5.
But
McKissick looked good, which I thought was nice. The 4 carries,
32 yards, nice gadget player.
Now, Perkins,
if you were going to put a lower end, if you were stuck putting lower end skill position players on the field for the last play of the game, you'd think it would be J.D. McKissick and Marvin Hall and do something weird. At the very least.
I thought for sure they were going to come out with five wide. Because it gives you so many options.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Perkins averaged 5.3. But his 16 yards to get him that 5.3, 13 came on the first carry. Mm-hmm. And then 0 on the second and 3 on the third. So, again, it's a bit deceiving on Perkins' production. Because he got that big chunk right off the bat. But I mean, there was some glimpses that the run game was getting a little bit better. It's still behind where it needs to be, though. Yeah.
All right, flipping over to the other side of the ball, they kept Derek Carr under 300 yards passing, but still a robust 289 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. But the big problem still is very glaring: 171 yards rushing on the ground.
Yeah, big chunk plays on the ground, right? I mean, I thought Snacks played well. He graded out well. But it continues to be flaws in a lot of different areas. And I thought Coleman played bad again. He's had a couple of bad games in a row here, which is troubling, I guess. And we talked last week about getting Slay back, how that could have a domino effect on the coverage of the other corners. Helped Melvin, but Coleman still struggled. But Slay was great. But yeah, Coleman, we need to see better from him in that. And then with no Tracy Walker, they also had a hard time covering the tight ends.
All right. Defense linking problems to communication issues. It's no surprise the second level had a lot of issues
on Sunday. And a couple of the players were saying, we're just not communicating well. And then Patricia said he didn't buy it, because he believes that everyone knows what they need to do and everyone was on the same page. But when I heard communication issues from the players, I was thinking more about, like, they're not communicating with each other during the play on, like, how to pick up assignments and stuff like that. Whereas I think Patricia took it more as everyone being on the same page. I think they know what the play call is. I think they're not trusting in each other, and they're trying to do too much on their own, and they're just not, you know, passing information along in a timely fashion.
You want to talk about turnovers again? Oakland, I didn't believe I had a single turnover.
They didn't, and the Lions had two. And when you lose two turnovers, one of them, when you're going in for the score into the touchdown, you throw that up, and then Worley makes that nice play touchdown catch in the end zone. That, you know, costs you points. And then the McKissick one, you're storming down the field and in the Raiders' half of the field, and you fumble the handoff there, and that costs you points. I mean, they were close to being in points area there too. And at that point, the Raiders had – the defense had no teeth, and they were just storming down the field. So those are costly plays. When you lose by one-score games and you turn the ball over twice in scoring opportunities – that's how you lose. And this is how they lost a couple of the games this year. You know, we've talked about that. It's just timely turnovers in bad locations on the field. And that's a big part of what I think cost them on this game as well.
We were told in-game at one point there wasn't one bright side to the Lions' turnovers. They didn't surrender many points to them. Until I think they believe Gabe gave up a touchdown. Not one of the.
I think it was a field goal.
That was a field goal.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, still, you're losing your opportunity to put points up. And that's that's killer.
All right, playoff hopes slimming down.
Yeah.
Maybe one more loss we can
you could
absorb.
Yeah.
We could be 10-5-1. That's probably his worst. record we can have and make the playoffs.
Yeah, you could make a case that they could lose two if other NFC North teams fall apart. But realistically, you got to look at it as you lose one and you're done, which makes every game paramount from here on out, including this week in Chicago.
In Chicago, down at Soldier Field, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Right, this is not a late start. Matt Nagy's Bears. All right, this is the second year. Led the Bears to the playoffs in year one and with an unfortunate ending against the Philadelphia Eagles, to say the least. Yeah. Vegas line is Bears by 3. That would be...
I think it's down to 2.5 now, but it was 3 when I was noting that.
No matter how down we are on our Lions currently, a lot more people are further down on the Bears.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why the line is shrinking. Referee is Carl Sheffers, averaging 13.88 penalties per game, which is about a half a penalty below the NFL average.
Carl Sheffers is most well known for the flag on the Phantom Aaron Rodgers face mask, which allowed them to have that Hail Mary toss
at Ford Field.
And then they got that Hail Mary pass to Richard Rodgers. He was the one who called the face mask. It was him that called that face mask. That was not. So.
Well, I'm guessing he's not going to help us out in this game. Is penalty calling down in the NFL this year?
No, it's up. It's up, but we've hit a couple of guys recently that have been a little bit under average.
Yeah, because 14.38 seems like a low number.
It's dropping. I think it's dropping because they're starting to say, you know, hold the flags, fellas. You're getting a little loosey-goosey.
Yeah, games are getting real slow.
Yeah.
Speed them back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody pay attention, even though this is two NFC teams. It's not going to be on Fox. It's going to be on CBS.
Yeah.
Iron Eagle with the great Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn doing the color. Last four games for the Bears, all losses. The latest to those same aforementioned Eagles who beat them in the playoffs first round or in the divisional round last year.
Yeah, it was an interesting
wild card round.
Interesting game against the Eagles. They couldn't do anything on offense in the first half. And the Eagles...
Diddly poo, as Jim Mora once said.
And the Eagles were driving, and they were getting into the red zone and even inside the 10, but then settling for field goals. Then when the Bears started to make... when they started chunking together a couple of big plays, the Eagles gave up a couple of touchdowns. But then when they needed to, the Eagles found a weak spot in the Bears' defense, and they just went to it over and over and over. And with like... what was it, like 9 minutes left in the game, the Eagles put together an 8 minute and 25 second drive. You know what I mean? Like when you are up less than a touchdown and you can put together a drive almost 9 minutes, you know, almost 8.5 minutes long, that's how you put a team away. You know what I mean? And they ended up
very Michigan State versus Iowa-esque.
They kicked a field goal to put them up by 8. It was still a one-score game. And then on the final kickoff, they pooched it short. And tight end Adam Shaheen went to field the ball, muffed it, gave it right back to the Eagles. And then the Eagles just needed to take a knee, and that was the game. And it was the week before against the Chargers, it was a similar last-second heartbreak that cost them the game against the Chargers. Chargers came out like gangbusters, got a big lead. The Bears kind of worked their way back in. Chargers were up 1, and the Bears drive down the field on the final play and then miss a game-winning field goal. A short one, too, like really like in the 30 yards or something like that range, and miss it, and that's how they lose that game. Week before, they lose to 11 to the Saints, who are proven to be a very good team. And the Raiders also beat the Bears as well. So
it's the Bears, they've got a bad offense, but they're at least hanging in there in a lot of these games.
Yeah, their defense is still good. Big things with the Bears' defense this year is they're not getting the turnovers that they used to. They're not getting off the field on third downs like they used to. And they're committing a lot more penalties than they used to. Last game against the Eagles, they hard-counted him 4 different times, and the Bears jumped all 4 times in the first half. And then they got a roughing the passer on a 4th down play that should have gotten them off the field. They roughed Carson Wentz. after throwing an incomplete pass on fourth down, which then that gives the Eagles a new set of downs, and then they go down and score a touchdown. So a couple of really bad penalties by the Bears defense that hurt them in that Eagles game as well.
All right, so we'll start with the Bears offense, which totaled a grand total 164 yards on 42 plays on Sunday.
9 yards in the first half.
Very impressive how low that number is. The DVOA of the Bears offense is ranked 27th in the NFL, whereas the Lions, faring a little bit better defensively at 24th. We've been hearing the numbers a lot lately of 31 and 32, and that's just an overall defensive stats just by the numbers.
Yeah. That doesn't take into account opponents and stuff like that, like DVOA does.
All right, so quarterback Mitch Trubisky, the second overall pick. Was that 2 years ago?
Three years ago. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about him. Chase Daniels, the backup.
Who is not playing bad.
No.
And there's been talk that maybe they bench Trubisky.
Oh, no.
But Nagy has been very adamant that he's not going to. But, yeah, I really hope he doesn't for this game because Trubisky has had his share of problems. We talked earlier about Stafford at the 8-game mark having 2,499 yards. At the 8-game mark, Mitch Trubisky has 1,217 yards. That's less than...
He's not prolific.
No. His quarterback rating is 66.6, which is appropriate.
Devil's number.
And last game, he threw for 125 yards. He's not turning the ball over, which is a feather in his cap, but on the season, he's only averaging like 5.5 yards per pass play, whereas like Stafford averages like 11.1, right, to give you an idea. So his numbers are significantly down. I hate to say that it's not all on him, but it's not. His receivers and running backs and tight ends are dropping balls, but he's also missing them, like just terrible throws. I mean, wide open throws. He's getting happy feet in the pocket. He was averaging like 30 yards a game or something, or 40 yards a game, something like that last year. Now he's averaging like half of that because he's not getting out of the pocket as much. Even though he's getting happy feet and trying to escape, he's still getting caught. He's a problem. And, you know, when we get to the offensive line, that offensive line isn't helping him at all either, right? And last year, the offensive line was able to give him some breathing room. They're not able to. And that lack of breathing room coupled with a mistake-oriented quarterback, and it's been a pretty rough show for the Bears on offense this year.
All right, running backs, David Montgomery and Tariq Cohen. Cohen used to be a big-time gadget player last year. He has not really been used in that role this year.
Well, they try.
He's
just been bad.
Failing.
Yeah, his production is cut in half as well. He's still getting about a third of the snaps, but his season average yards per rush is like 5.7. He was like over 11 last year. He was averaging 50 yards a game. Now he's only averaging like 24. He is still a dangerous punt returner. He took one back to the house a couple of games ago. But he is not the explosive cat that he was. And he's dropping passes. Now, Montgomery is their third-round pick, a guy that I really liked in last year's draft class. He only had 40 yards against the Eagles, but he had a couple of scores where he poached a couple off other people. He can be a weapon in the passing game. He had 36 yards in receiving last game. But the game prior to that against the Chargers, he was over 123 yards rushing or something like that. So he can be a good player. Now, there's potential for him to be a problem against the Lions. If there's a spot on this offense that could cause problems, I think it could be Montgomery. Because he's got some elements to his game that are pretty tricky. The Lions have struggled against the run. And he has proven that he can put the ball in his hands and make him some moves. So I think Montgomery will be an interesting character. If I'm worried about anyone on offense, it's Montgomery.
All right, moving on to the wide receiver group, Allen Robinson, a local kid.
Yeah, he's the best offensive player on this team, hands down. But I'm not as worried about him as I am about Montgomery because Trubisky's the one trying to get the ball to him.
All right, the other wide receivers, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, Cordarrelle Patterson, Javon Wims, and Riley Ridley, but he doesn't see the field that much.
Yeah, he's their fourth-round pick. He's been inactive pretty much all year. Gabriel he's really good. They use him on screens and stuff, but again, he's fast. It'll be interesting to see if they put Coleman on him or if they put Coleman on Anthony Miller. Anthony Miller is a second-year guy who I really like as a player, but he put up a goose egg last game, and they didn't look his way at all, whereas against the Chargers, they were using him as like the safety valve. So Patterson's your gadget guy. He's your kick returner. He's taking
fast.
He's taking a kick return to the house this year, last game or the game before. And, I mean, they'll try and get him the ball every once in a while. It's not a bad receiving group by any means. The problem is that they're just not getting the ball, and there's some drops throughout the group too. So it's been a down year for this this receiving group as a whole.
All right, the tight ends, since we're talking about receiving threats, include Trey Burton, Adam Shaheen, you mentioned him earlier, J.P. Holtz.
And now this is where the Bears wanted to make a strength of their team, and it has come up very poorly this year. Burton was supposed to be this game-changing Zach Ertz type of like impact guy, and he's been struggling. And I think in the two games I watched, he had one catch, and I think he only has like 14 on the year, less than 100 yards. You know, it's not significant the type of impact that he's putting on the field, which is a bit surprising because he's not a bad player at all. Shaheen is a guy people are really low on. Holtz, their third guy who sees the field quite a bit. He's like a fullback tight end hybrid guy. They'll use him a lot in the backfield. But the tight end group, again, as a whole, hasn't been producing. And they put a lot of that on. Whereas the receivers are good enough to produce, the tight ends have not shown that they're good enough to produce.
All right, moving on to the offensive line. From left to right, we've got Charles Leno, Cody Whitehair, James Daniels. The right guard is normally Kyle Long, Howie Long's son. He's on injured reserve, so Rashad Coward, which is a terrible name for a football player, having the last name Coward. Although, you know, that probably helped propel him to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And then the right tackle is Bobby Massey. Cornelius Lucas, their sixth offensive lineman. Not the greatest group.
No, and Whitehair is their best player. He was their center last year, but when they drafted James Daniels, they put Daniels at center, shifted Whitehair out the left guard. And I think Daniels might be their second best offensive lineman, but they're so unhappy with Daniels right now that they're talking about moving Whitehair back to center and shifting Daniels out, which is troubling, I think, for them. Because if you're not happy with the guy who's probably your second best offensive lineman, that speaks to what the other offensive linemen are doing as well. Whitehair's really the guy you have to worry about. The rest of them are all very much underperforming. This could be a game where the Lions are able to get pressure without bringing anything extra.
All right, moving over to the defensive side of the ball. This is the Bears' strength, this is the Lions' strength, this is the money matchup. So if you're going to go get something to eat or drink, do it while the Bears are on offense. The DVOAs of the Lions' offense is 13th, which is that down from last week? I thought we were in the top 10 last week.
I think it was pretty close.
All right, the Bears' defense is number 8.
Yeah. And as we've seen in the last couple of games with the Bears, every point matters. They're going to need to make sure that they're scoring with every opportunity. You can't turn the ball over when you're in an opportunity to score. Field goals are important, especially on the road. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them try and push it and get touchdowns, but if they're not going to get touchdowns, I expect them to try and just get nickel and dime the points anywhere that they can. So it's an interesting Bears defense. They basically run like a 2-4-5 because they have two technical linebackers that are basically like defensive end linebacker hybrids. And we will see them shift to a traditional 3-4. They do a lot of man coverage on the back end. Big flaw for them, though, has been covering the tight ends. They've used cornerbacks, they've used safeties, they've used linebackers, and none of them have really been able to cover a tight end. So that's an area where I think the Lions might be able to take advantage. And like I said earlier, the big key with this team, with this defense, is that the takeaways are down, the penalties are up, and they're struggling to get off the field on third downs. And that's the big difference. For example, they have 11 takeaways on the season. At this point last year, they had 21. They have 11. And five of those 11 came in one game against the Redskins, which means they were only averaging just under one turnover on the other seven games of the year. So that's very down for them, and that's a big part of why this team has looked beatable, whereas in the past the defense has been so dominating, and why they're not the number one defense in the league anymore.
All right, let's move on to Chuck Pagano's defensive line. Hakeem Hicks is one of their best defenders, but he's on IR, so he's also been a terror to the Lions over the years. But so we don't have to worry about him this go-around.
Yeah, he's phenomenal, and that's a big loss for them.
Eddie Goldman, the nose tackle, left the game in the second quarter against the Eagles.
He missed yesterday's practice, returned today limited. It'll be interesting to see what happens to him. He'll probably be questionable, could be a game-time decision. If they don't have Goldman, that's a big, big, big problem for them, because the middle of their line will be beat up.
His backup is Nick Williams, and then we'll see Bilal Nichols also on the defensive
line. And,
Roy Robertson-Harris.
Yeah, Brent Urban too. All these guys, while Goldman is their nose tackle, the rest of these guys can play the nose, they can play the three, they can play the five, almost all of them. And so they can switch these guys in and out. And they're not locked in. Like, a lot of teams are locked into where this guy plays this role and that's it. The Bears have a lot of fluidity amongst their front interior guys. And so they can move these guys interchangeably. It's a good luxury for them.
Now, say their linebacking unit might be their best unit out on the field offensively or defensively. Although, as you pointed out, the edges are pass rushers. Khalil Mack was definitely the best player on their team.
Yeah.
And Leonard Floyd.
Yeah, we all know Mack. I mean, Mack's still a terror. His sacks are down, but he's still producing. He's still getting pressures. He's still making an impact. He's going to be the guy that everyone needs to be worried about, and they're going to have to account for and double. Floyd is not, he's having a decent year, but he's not, he's When you look at him across from Mack, he's going to look pale in comparison. But he's another guy that they're going to have to account for. They use Aaron Lynch as a backup with him as well, and they'll put him in when the Mack or Leonard need a break. Leonard really, he plays about 80%. Mack plays about 90%, so that leaves Lynch just 25% or so of time. But these guys, they're problems. This is where they might be weak in the middle because of injuries right now, but their edges are problems.
All right, the middle linebackers are Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan. Trevathan, the former Bronco. Roquan Smith, high draft pick.
Eighth overall. He is a very good linebacker who's struggling right now. Trevathan leads the team in tackles. Smith is second. But they're both having problems covering tight ends, and that's become a big flaw for them. For example, the Eagles, the tight ends alone put up 132 yards on the Bears last week. So, and Trevathan was the guy that got exposed a couple of times by those tight ends. So they're good linebackers. This group of four is really good. They rarely leave the field, the four of them, but there are some flaws there that we aren't accustomed to that we see this year that we haven't seen in the past.
All right, moving on to the defensive secondary, which is another Bears strength. Let's start with the corners. Kyle Fuller, one of the Fuller brothers, and Prince Amukamara. People are probably well acquainted with those two. Buster Skrines, the nickelback.
Yeah, Fuller's having a little bit of a down year. He's getting penalties, but he also is leading the team in interceptions with three. But he's aggressive, and when you're aggressive, you either get turnovers or penalties. And right now, he's starting to get more penalties than he is turnovers. but he's still going to be aggressive, and it's going to be an interesting matchup to see how they deploy these two. Amukamara is he's a good corner, and he could be a problem. My guess is it's going to be Fuller on Marvin, Amukamara on Kenny from a size perspective. And those will both be really good matchups to watch.
The safeties are Eddie Jackson and Haha Clinton Dix, a good pair.
Yeah, and they lost Amos and then got Haha Clinton Dix. Dix has played better here than he did in Green Bay, which is good for him. But he still has some flaws. He has a couple picks. That's what Eddie Jackson was really good at last year, interceptions, but he's not getting them, and he's been struggling in coverage. He looked lost. Both games that I watched him, it did not look like the Eddie Jackson that we saw last year. And he looked very much like he was struggling. He struggled to come up and stop the run. He was missing. He was blowing assignments. There's a lot of things that were really strange. A lot of strange errors that you didn't see out of Eddie Jackson last year. That again are happening this year. And this kind of speaks to why the defense is struggling. You got a couple of these guys who are really good players who are just having, kind of down years when it happens at the wrong time, it becomes a cumulative effect and it leads to, struggles.
Third safety, Sherrick McManus.
Yeah, he's okay. They just got him, from Minnesota, I think? They just got him from, and he's already jumping in there playing well.
All right, moving on to another big money matchup, the special teams, which you've been pointing out the last couple of weeks. The Lions have a very good special teams, DVOA number 6. Bears, now DVOA number 2. Wasn't Oakland DVOA number 2 last week?
We were 2 last week.
Oh, we were 2. We fell to 6, and now the Bears have replaced us at 2.
It's a bit strange that that we have a drop, and the Bears...
Well, there's not a lot of special teams play, so it's easy to take a big swing or a big move up or down.
And even though the Bears are 2, I think a lot of they have a kick return and a punt return, as I've mentioned earlier. But they've also had a punt blocked in the last 3 games, and they've also missed field goals in the last 3 games. So, but the big thing is their coverage is really good, just like the Lions' coverage is really good. And so you've got both teams have kick returners who can take it to the house. Both special teams have good coverage units. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Lions continue to kick it short and see if and test Cordarrelle Patterson and test Tariq Cohen, because those are dangerous guys on those return units. But it's the Lions are good. One thing we didn't talk about from the Oakland game was the C.J. Moore play, where...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we probably should take a minute to talk about that.
That was an interesting...
Which infuriated everybody at the minute it happened, but then when they came back and showed... Thank goodness they showed the replay.
Yes.
Calm down, everyone.
Yes.
You did the right thing.
Kudos to Fox for picking up on that and then salvaging the rookie, because he would have got destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, people would have just gone nuts over him. And it turns out he did the right thing. So... he's been good. C.J. Moore has been good all year, and so he said himself he wasn't animated enough to let his team know that his team needed to make a play on the ball. He said that his biggest flaw was he should have really let people know he was too subtle, and so he'll learn from that. He made the right play. It was a really good punt by Sam Martin. It was a shame that that didn't work out the way it
was. Yeah, because they lost 20 yards or 19 yards of field position on it.
Yep.
Just noting, Eddie Pinheiro's the place kicker, Pat O'Donnell's the punter, just so you know the names, although you know them really quickly enough.
Yep.
All right, so Lions, Sunday, Bears, what are your thoughts? We heard you break everything down.
Yep.
Who's going to win? Who's going
to
lose?
All right, I got to do my math here right now to try and get my number. So why don't
what's the over on? You hit the over in.
You it's low. It's 43 or something like that. It's kind of low. Give me a second to get my score. I didn't prepare myself ahead of time. You won again last week.
Yep,
so you're starting now, you're in the lead and I'm going to have to start making up some time here, so it probably doesn't matter.
I usually do well in the beginning of the year, and then you do well later in the year, as I'm losing my focus, because as they drift off into their playoffless slumber. You know, I'm still watching the games, but I'm not in tune to what the score is going to be as well as I am earlier in the year. But so you want me to go first?
Yeah, I think I know what I'm going to do. I don't think it matters what the score is anyways, because I think we're picking on opposite sides.
We'll pick on opposite sides. And
that's my guess.
Just for the simple fact that we're having an Arctic blast right now, the high temperature in Chicago on Sunday is going to be 41 degrees. I think the low is going to be something around 27.
Okay. So Monday night Green Bay weather, like we saw.
Monday night Green Bay weather. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not super cold, but it's kind of hit everybody. No. Nobody's ready for it in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. We're ready for it to be cold at night. I don't think anybody's ready enough for it to be cold in the afternoon. Bears play very good defense. Lions play very good offense. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the cure to our bad run defense is the Bears. You know, I hope the cure to our bad defense overall is the Bears. But I'm going to have to go with the Bears 21-17.
Okay.
To get off their four-game losing streak, mostly due to the cold weather.
I have a similar score. You said 21-17?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be 21-19, but I'm going with the Lions.
All right. I hope you're right. I say this every week. People get mad at me for picking the Lions to lose all the time. I hope I'm wrong.
I
want Eric to come back.
I think you're going to see some weird kicking stuff in the kicking game this week. And I think it's going to lead to a kind of a wonky score for the Bears. And my guess is the Lions get out and then they just try and hold them off. And it'll be heart palpitations all the way.
Yeah, no, that'll be if they win that way, it'll be very frustrating.
But I think this offense, the Bears offense, is struggling. They can hit the big play. I do think they're going to be able to get right in a lot of ways against Detroit, because they match up well in a couple of ways that they haven't been able to take advantage of in the last couple of weeks. But I think Hockenson is set up for a really good game. I think you could lean on Jesse James in this game, which you haven't done at all. You're going to struggle on the outside. You're going to struggle in the run game, but I just don't think they can hold up long enough. It's going to be close.
All right. Well, it's enough talking about that game. Let's talk about, you know, we had a couple of shout-outs. We had a great response from the listeners last week. We're really appreciative.
Yeah, so the reviews and the ratings have kind of caught themselves
nice
up.
Nice little spike.
They balanced themselves off. We're up to 252 now. Right within striking distance.
Yeah, we're in striking distance of the top.
Yeah.
Or what we think is the top.
Well, from what we know, yeah.
From what we know.
So that's 7 ratings. We got 5 reviews. From Lions Vic, Nick the Greek, who had a very nice, long, clever.
Yeah, very clever.
Right.
Very creative.
Yes.
And he did catch the dogs.
Yes.
But in fairness to the dogs, once it was a coyote.
It was a coyote barking one time. That's true.
Can't control the coyote.
A North Carolina Lions fan, Drew Lays, G-Spa, they've all gave us some nice reviews this week. All said some nice things about the two of us and how we, the content that we produce. You know, I think one of the nicest things was that they said that you can tell that the two of us care about the product that we put out. So I liked that a lot.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's awesome that people listen, you know, and they keep listening. And it's great to hear back from everybody letting us know what they think of the show.
I should point out that we did get a review on Stitcher from one of our fans in Germany.
Well, that's great. And that's crazy, too, that people listen to us overseas.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Very. It's nice to interact on social media with the people that listen as well. It's nice to hear.
Yeah, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And tell your friends if you like the show and if they like the Lions, too. Because otherwise, be like, why'd you tell me to listen to this? All right. That's it. Well, hopefully we have an enjoyable football game to watch on Sunday. And until that time, Let's go, Lions.